we're the ones that change people's mindsets. And we usually do it in school where we start telling them, oh no, failure is not an option. Your four-year-old that wants to go out and play, we start going, no, you're naughty. If you want to go out and play, you need to sit in color, right? So we're the ones that screw that up. So we only have to undo that mindset if we fucked it up in the first place. If we start out that way with our young people, teaching them, hey man, failure is exciting, failure is awesome, they never know any different and they'll just keep going.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smart Destiny podcast. So this time we're joined by my friend Matt Beaudreau. He is the founder of Acton Plusser and founder of the Apogee Strong program. What Matt is doing, frankly, is an amazing job. But what he is doing is he is building strong young people so we don't have broken older people. He is unleashing dragon slayers in a world where dragons exist. It is incredible. There is an alternative to the current education system, the current college system, the current everything system. And Matt is opening that up to the masses. He is a multiple TEDx speaker. He's spoken on TEDx stages multiple times. That means he's a speaker and consultant who's spoken to over 250,000 people all over the world. And he is also the founder and owner of three separate schools. He is truly building a generation of dragon slayers in the future. And we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the curriculum. We're going to get into the why. We're going to get into all of that in today's show. So stay tuned, and please join me in welcoming Matt to the stage. Matt, how's it going, brother?
Love it, man. Doing very, very well, sir. It's an honor to be here. I appreciate you.
Whereabouts in the world are you coming to us from right now,
Matt? I am in the mountains of North Carolina at the present moment. So most of my businesses are based in California. I'm California born and raised, but we found a great ranch and couldn't afford to pass it up. So that's where I am currently.
Oh, I love that. All right, so the way we like to kick off this show is we like to go back to a logical starting point in your journey, the point where you were bitten by the entrepreneur spider, sort of stealing a bit there from Marvel and stealing a bit from entrepreneurs. And there is normally a story wrapped up in that. There is normally a conflict. There is normally some kind of pressure or challenge, because that's how diamonds are made, right? So if you have a time in mind, can you take us back to that time and tell us a word picture?
Yeah, man, the most obvious part for me, or the turning point for me, was like many other entrepreneurs, I wanted my own problem, and it turned into something that solved many problems, right? And so I have three amazing young humans that I get to raise, and I've been in the education game for a long time, and I say game on purpose. I learned the game very early, and the game is not about building strong young people. The game is about building obedient, subservient, humans that are going to be falling lockstep in line. So I learned that very early on. I was working in higher ed. I was working as a public school teacher, a public school administrator, private school teacher, private school administrator. And I'm seeing all of this game while simultaneously raising these young people at home. And so it got to the point where my oldest was getting ready to go to school, and knowing the game of school and how different it was of education, that was a big turn for me. There was no way I was going to send her to any of the schools, didn't matter how highly touted in my area. So I knew I had to do something different. And that's when, I really, okay, I'm going to create my own. And that really ended up launching all of the other things that I've ended up getting to do, multiple schools, speaking all around the world, the mentorship program, all the things that I've got launched really started from that moment of I've got to do something different for my kids.
I love that. And anyone that's sort of spoken to me long enough knows that I'm a firm, whatever the opposite of advocate is I think one of the worst sentences on planet Earth is as a justification for doing something to respond because it's always been done that way. And I think it's very putting you know, square pieces in round holes to assume that people are, you know, like in the 9 to 5, you're at your most productive between 9 to 5. You will be hungry between 12 and 2. You will be, you know, all of this stuff is just, it's painting, it's creating an army of clones. And actually, if you don't fit the mold of the clone, you fail, when actually you might not fit that clone mold. Just because you're more successful, you're different, you're wired differently, and you're destined for great things, right, as long as someone doesn't mute you and force you into that circular hole. So you had this pain, you had this thing gnawing at your inside with your eldest child, and you said, right, I'm just going to go and do something about it. I mean, what you've built is huge, but what did that step one look like?
Yeah, so... Yeah, the step one was always the hardest, because that's, again, you've come up in this clone system, and so you're not really taught how to critically think, how to take what does that first step need to look like. And what I've, you know, grown accustomed to saying is I no longer believe in ready, aim, fire. I believe very much in fire, aim, ready. Right. And so I went out and visited a school that looked very much like the one I wanted to build. And I came back and I got in my, you know, bed, and my wife was laying there, and I said, all right, we're either going to move to Texas where this school was, or we're going to launch one for our kids. And she's like, I don't want to go to Texas. I was like, I don't really want to go to Texas either. She's like, all right, I guess we better launch. And I said, cool. And I'm going, dude, I don't know what the first step is. So I literally just started telling people. I mean, that's it. I just started. It was, you know, I want to make some sort of, talk about some sort of revelation. We can talk about some. I just fucking started talking to human beings, going, look, you know, school's a mess. I know school's a mess. I'm going to do something different. I know your kids are different than my kids. I know you're different than I am. I want to unlock the genius that's inside everybody. And I want to bring a community of people together that's all about supporting young people and growing to be the people that they can be. That's it. I literally just started having conversations. And those conversations were, you know, I was having breakfast with a stranger, lunch with a stranger, dinner with a stranger, and holding parenting related, you know, coffee chats at night. And I did that over the course of a year to really build that initial tribe that trusted me to go ahead and launch something that could work for their young heroes. You know, and it took off from there. It was just conversations. It was the decision to act and having conversations. That was it.
Okay, so not all that dissimilar in terms of at least the process to, like, when you're creating any kind of solution in the market. Like, okay, so what's broken currently? What are people complaining about with the current solution? How can I make this better? So what sort of things were the parents you were speaking to complaining about, or at least unhappy about, when it comes to the status quo, the norm, the current education system that they're forced to work with?
Yeah, so what's interesting is people all get this, I think, from an intellectual standpoint. There's a lot of similarities, right? If you ask somebody, well, what do you want for your young person? What do you want them to grow to be? They'll tell you they want them to be happy. They want them to be productive. They want them to be passionate about what they do. They want them to be a good citizen with high character, strong work ethic. They want them to be able to give back, right? So they'll give you kind of a general similar response. And I'll say, okay, how does having to learn specifically to read at age 5 play into that? Well, I don't know if it really does. Okay, what if they were, you know, doing algebra by age 15? Does that make a difference? I don't know. What if they did it at 13? Does that make a difference? What if they did it at 18? Does that make a difference? There's a huge disconnect between what school and what people say that they want. Right. And so everybody says they want that happy, healthy human being. And so my whole job, my whole role is to go, okay, well, how do we get that and disassociate that from school? Because if I ask people to get out of that school mindset, they can see it intellectually, they can't get around it emotionally. There is a religious tie that people have to doing school a specific way. And that is the biggest challenge, is getting people out of that, that's the way we've always done it kind of deal. Right. And so that's the problem that we're solving.
So I remember actually in season one of the podcast, I used to ask what, I think one of the questions was something along the lines of what is taught at school that absolutely shouldn't be? Or like, what would you get rid of and what at school and what would you replace it with? And there was a lot of things which sort of came up, but overwhelmingly the answer for what should be replaced, just in case you're curious, was some sort of financial education, like teaching money management and holding on to money and doing taxes and all of that. That was overwhelmingly a thing that should be taught at schools, was the answer from about 50 entrepreneurs, which I found quite interesting.
Finance is huge. The people not wanting specific kinds of sexual indoctrination, religious indoctrination, people wanting to steer clear of those things. They want to add in the financial side. But if you tell people, or if you ask people that question, well, what do you want to see? The reality is, most people don't. They'll say the finance thing, but they don't really know what they want to see. They just want the outcome of a happy young kid. They can't really tell you how that works.
So how do you even break that down? So they're all in agreement. Everyone you've said is like, hey, do you want your kid to be happy or unhappy? Oh, happy. Do you want it to be healthy or unhappy? Healthy. Yeah. Of course. I mean, these are really easy things to answer. Do you want them to be a leader or a follower? I think a lot
to be a leader. Of course.
Leader. Okay. Yep. So you've got this information. How do you begin to create a curriculum for that?
Yeah. So that's the whole thing, is that you have to do the opposite of school. School is designed to do the opposite of all those things we say we want for our young people. It's designed that way, intentionally. So we talk about these schools that don't do traditional school. We talk about these as the alternative schools, right? The alternative education. The reality is, it's how education has always worked. The system of school that you and I grew up going to, that's the alternative, and it's an alternative that's not working. So the easiest way that I can explain it is, if I was going to ask you what your favorite food is, but I only ever allowed you, Martin, to try 5 different foods ever. That's all you were ever able to have. Well, if I asked you what your favorite was, you would pick out of those 5 because you wouldn't have any other context. On the contrary, if I took you to a buffet and I took you there every single day and there was every single kind of food imaginable there, and you just kept trying new food after new food after new food, and then you started getting creative and going, you know what? I really like these tacos, but I also really love this, Korean barbecue. So maybe if I put these together, oh my gosh, this is right. And you could start to build these unique flavor profiles and all this stuff. Then you'd have a much more nuanced answer, and it would be much more akin to who you really are. It's the same thing for young people. What we want for them is to experience as many things as possible, not be told as many things as possible, experience those. There's a difference between having somebody lecture you about food and you actually cooking the food, making the food, picking the food up, eating the food, tasting the food, right? There's a vast difference. So what we want for our young heroes is, how many experiences can we give these young people where they're hands-on actually doing whatever the thing is, and then getting to step back and go, okay, I really like that, or I really hated that, or I would change this, right? So our curriculum, for lack of a better word, is a self-awareness and a self-confidence that comes from doing a lot of things, right? And they do it individually, they do it collectively. They do it collectively with people of their own age group. They do it collectively with people that are older, that are younger. They get out in the community and they do these things collectively with, real life entrepreneurs. They go work in real businesses. It's all experiential. And that's what makes the difference. They're not being lectured at ever. They're not playing some arbitrary game for a grade. They're doing real world things.
So what things, other than the ones you've mentioned, are on your buffet table? So you've got this buffet where they're being empowered to choose from themselves and get stuck in and even sort of prepare some of the buffet dishes, if you like, keeping the food analogy going.
Sure.
What kind of things are available at your buffet that aren't available in a curriculum of school, or maybe some of the favorite things or some of the more popular things that you do?
Yeah. So every year looks a little different. We've got, you know, K through 12 on campus. So one of the key components is they all know each other. They're all working together with each other. And they'll do things with people of like age, and they'll do things with people, again, younger and older, right? So they've got multiple things they've got to take on. One, they've got to decide who they want to be. They create contracts of character and behavior that they hold each other accountable to. That means there's no adult there going, hey, no running in the hallways, no this. No. They decide what does it look like on their campus, and they enforce the rules around that, right? And they'll enforce it harder than any adults ever will. I mean, they will run the line. They then take on jobs on campus as well. So like we've got a chef, you know, on campus. The chef happens to be a student. The chef is cooking real food every day and hires other young people and is responsible for getting real food, real meals out to other students by the time lunch is there, if those students, you know, the student is ordered, right? Some students run tech and AV for different events that we have. They all have responsibilities on campus. They all have responsibilities off campus, whether that's starting and running a business that we will help them, you know, figure out a product or service to bring to market. So they all, from 5 years old to 18, they all have businesses that they are running actively, either solo or sometimes in a partnership. All of those are there. Then they take on individual projects. And this is kind of like the little buffet part where they'll take on a project where, you know, if they're younger, maybe they are creating a mock restaurant or a mock food truck or a mock water park. And they're having to run start to finish. They're having to source. Okay, well, if I had to get materials from here to build out my restaurant, if I had to make my menu here, where would I source my food? How much would I have to charge to make a profit and start running a mock P&L? So they're actually getting real world experience in this little microcosm of this individual project. And then every 6 weeks, they take on a collaborative project as well. And that collaborative project might be something like, everybody work together to put on a play for the community. Some of you are going to write the script. Some of you are going to act. Some of you are going to sell the tickets. Some of you are going to do the lighting and sound. Some of you are going to market the event. Some of you are going to build the props. Some of you are going to build the costumes. And then 6 weeks later, they would change it. You're going to build a mock city and you're going to run electricity to it. And you're going to have to figure out how to run electricity to the city. You're going to do a NASA quest and you're going to all compete and you're going to have to figure out how to build rockets, test different fuels. And we're going to have a big competition where you're going to shoot rockets off and see who goes the furthest. So they're taking on all of these different things, individual, collaborative, out in the real world, starting a business, all of that. And oh, by the way, they'll take on their academics as well, but for maybe an hour and a half a day. And that's goal driven too, just because Martin, you're 30. Are you 30? 30?
Yeah, I'm north of 30. 35, yeah.
35. So Martin's 35. I'm older than 35. Martin's 35 and I'm 35. Well, we might not be exactly at the same place at the same time in every single thing, but that's okay. Martin's trying to get better than Martin was yesterday. Matt's trying to get better than Matt was yesterday at our own individual academic goals, right? And then we have responsibilities on campus as well. We put all of that together and you're building superheroes that are learning to work with other humans, but they're also gaining so many different experiences that they become very, very self-aware, right? Well, here's what I always gravitate to in all these different projects. I'm the one that likes to get up and I like to talk to other people and really kind of do the presentations. I'm a communicator, or you know what? I always like to stay in the background, but I'm going to build the props. I'm going to build the rockets. I'm going to build, you know, whatever this is. And you start to see patterns in the things you're really excited about and the things you really love to really good at, as well as the things that you don't like. And then you start to get confidence because you've actually done so many things, right? It's not some bullshit thing that you did to get an A on a paper. You actually created a product and you sold it to another human being who paid you money. And you're 6 or 7 years old, you actually did something right there. So you actually become confident as well. You give 12 years of that, they're freaking ninjas.
I think that's brilliant. I mean, I said in some of our communication before we filmed this episode, I was like, man, I wish this existed, right, in the UK. Our son goes to a thing which is like the closest we have available to that.
Yeah.
Because we genuinely, as my wife and I, we got frustrated with, like, he's at this other school, it's like preschool, and, you know, he's not someone that wants to sit down and colour all day, but, like, you know, colour in things. He wants to get outside and get messy, but on a day where it's cold and wet, the teachers who haven't brought their coats, they don't want to go outside, so the kids don't go outside. And so he's being told to colour in on a piece of paper. He doesn't want to do that, so he's naughty. That, by their words, I hate that word, but he's naughty because he's not doing what they're telling him to do, but he has no fucking interest in colouring in a piece of paper. He wants to learn and get out there and touch things and whatever.
That's right.
And it's very frustrating as a parent. So, okay, so we're speaking about this, and I can already hear the audience going, wow, this is amazing. I want to get enroll in this. Yeah. But, you know, how legit is this? So, Matt, what entrepreneurs, well-known people have endorsed or been a part or touched this in some way that you can reel off to reassure those people in the audience that this is the legitest of legit?
Yeah. You know, and I always tell people, I have no desire to convince them. You either see this or you're one of the people that wants to have an authority tell you what to do all the time, you know, but I think your audience is probably not that type of person. So, so many entrepreneurs that have started to speak, very fondly about what we're doing. So Gary Vaynerchuk has been one of the first, you know, a few years ago. I've had Gary on my podcast and Gary, you know, dove in a little bit around what we're doing. And in true Gary Vaynerchuk fashion, he goes, well, that's a school I would have fucking gone to. You know, and so he's a huge fan, has done some things for us. Damon John, FUBU founder, you know, famous for being on Shark Tank. Jeff Hoffman, founder of Priceline.com. Seth Godin has come out multiple times saying, look, Acton Academies are the only thing that makes sense, you know, in 21st century education. Jordan Peterson has teamed with us for our MBA program, Acton Academy Fellowship. Andy Frazella, Elon Musk. I mean, the list goes on of entrepreneurs who are saying, look, this is what makes sense because this is how you actually learn. You learn by doing. You know, and so it just makes a whole lot of sense. And young people are so freaking capable, man, and they can take on so much responsibility and they can do so early on. And that's how you build superhumans. And so, I'm probably missing some, but those are some pretty heavy hitters right there.
Yeah, some extremely heavy hitters. Okay, so now I'm curious. So we obviously you've got your Acton Academies. Now, if the entrepreneur parent or the person that wants this for their child, unfortunately, doesn't have the ability to get all the way over to California to take advantage of it right now, or they're in a different country or for whatever reason, or they just want to deploy some of your teachings at home outside of hours, right, with their kids, they want to give them a chance to this. What kind of advice, strategies, tips or whatever would you give to the entrepreneur parents out there to nurture in the time that they can nurture their children in the way that you provide as opposed to the alternative education you mentioned?
It's a really good question, man. So first and foremost, we are a global network, right? I empower entrepreneurs all over we've got 300 campuses around the world. I believe we've got one now coming into the UK. And any entrepreneurs that are truly interested, I can help you open one. That's no money in my pocket. I have no desire for that anyways. I'm good. I'm playing with house money. So if any entrepreneurs are really serious about it, I can help you, you know, help you understand how to launch a campus of your own. But that said, one of the things I always tell parents, especially entrepreneurial parents, is your kids will do what you do far before they do what you say. So first and foremost, lead by example. If you want your young person to have strong work ethic, strong character, you want them to be leaders, you want them to be good human beings, you want them to be happy and purpose-driven and all those things we were talking about early, do it yourself. It starts with you, because if you want, you know, you're telling them you could be anything you want to be and want you to be happy and all this, but then they see you walking around and you're moping and you're not excited about what you do from a day to day, you know, on a day to day basis. And they're hearing you complain about your job that sucks and your boss that sucks, or you're this and that. They pick up on the hypocrisy, right? So you lead by example first. That's first and foremost. Second, you want to get them out of the bad habits they develop in school. And school is about developing bad habits. It's developing the habit of being obedient, the habit of, you know, falling in line and bowing to anybody who claims authority. And not that you should be disrespectful. That's never on the agenda. But it's about building bad habits and about saying that your inherent passions don't matter. So you've got to cultivate that as much as possible. We're talking about experiences early. What experiences can you allow for your young people? You can help them start a business. And that can be as simple as a lemonade stand or a cookie stand if they're earlier, or you know, go bigger if you want to go bigger. But experiences, starting a business, getting involved in you know, youth sports, youth activities, anything that's experiential is going to far outweigh the academic silliness that they're going to be doing in school. I mean, those are huge. But you got to make those things, you know, and make those things non-negotiable in your homes too. You know, we have 11 rules in our house, and those rules are created by us as a family, which means, yeah, I hold them accountable too. I hold my wife and my kids accountable to those rules. They hold me accountable as well. If daddy's complaining about something, my six-year-old might, hey dad, rule number six, man, no complaining, fix it. What are you going to do to fix the problem? Right.
And I'd love to see those rules. Is that something you've got a blog anywhere that you share, or is this an internal family thing?
I mean, I've shared it on a couple of podcasts and things. I'm glad to shoot them over to you or whatever I can do, whatever makes it easy. But I'm glad to throw them out your way.
That'd be amazing. All right. So I've got a question around conflict or when things don't add up. So I'll give you a story. So when I was younger, I was rather good at table tennis. In fact, I was in the top 40 in England at table tennis, right? Ping pong. Right. And I had two separate coaches. I had a coach that was really, really good at the strategy stuff, but wasn't so good at the speed and wasn't able to keep up. And I had a coach that didn't really know anything about the strategy. They were just really fast, like a robot, just getting it back. Okay. And most of the time, these coaches, the advice that they gave me agreed. But some would like with each other, but sometimes they gave conflicting advice. And I remember as a child struggling with that sometimes. And I spoke to my dad and I said, look, my dad, I'm getting conflicting advice here. Who do I follow? Who do I listen to? And he said, basically, you need to listen to the advice, be respectful, but you need to adopt the one which makes most sense to you. You will know which one feels right and it feels aligned with the other advice that you've given. So my question, applying that to this world and the conversation we're talking about, is what happens when the children who perhaps aren't currently placed with your school, or maybe they are, but they're also in sort of outside clubs or societies or whatever. What do you advise and teach when they've got conflicting information from people in a power position over them, right? Like, you know, an authority figure.
That's a really good question. So first thing I would say is take a look and see if the advice is really as conflicting as you think it is. And here's what I mean by that. You know, we got our mentorship program, right? And the mentorship program, one of the things we talk about with these young men is that we feel like every young man should be able to be the savage gentleman. We think you should be able to be a savage if needed and a gentleman all the time. Well, those two things look like they conflict. But the reality is we think you should have the dichotomy of being able to be both, right? You have the capabilities. Like Jordan Peterson always says, this is a good man who is weak isn't really a good man. A good man is dangerous who has it voluntarily under control, right? So we think you should be able to be both. You should have the ability to be a savage and always be a physical savage, be able to protect your family if you need to protect your family, be physically capable of doing that, have a ridiculous work ethic and have to be, you know, cutthroat if you need to be cut, have that ability. But you live your life as a very generous, kind, well-mannered human being the majority of the time. Those seem conflicting. You should be both. So I would first check that advice. Is it conflicting, or do you really need both pieces that just need to come out at different times? Because more often than not, I think it falls there, right? So that's the first step. Then if they really are conflicting things, I think your dad, that was good advice as far as like, well, you know, what seems most right to you, because what you got to decide is, okay, if I really have two different pieces of advice, get the context for where those are coming from and then figure out, well, who do I want to be? The person that I want to be, the person that I most, you know, and that's usually a, an amalgamation of a number of different individuals, right? Napoleon Hill talks about his board of directors in Think and Grow Rich, right? Where he's got all these different people where in various scenarios, he will look up to various people and he will try to make his response kind of like, okay, well, what would this person do, and this person do, right? And so I think you take that advice from that exact same sort of standpoint and go, okay, I got this advice and this advice. The person that I want to be is kind of this amalgamation of, you know, it's of my dad and of, you know, whoever. You got your list and go, well, what would they do? How would they approach this? What advice, what would they take? That usually will give you your answer.
Beautiful. I love that. Okay. So far we've spoken about the younger person schools, Acton Plessa. Mm-hmm. You've also, as we said in the introduction, you've got the Apogee Strong program. Yep. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So Apogee Strong. So my friend Tim Kennedy, who some of the listeners may know, he was a UFC top middleweight fighter for a long time, U.S. Special Forces. He's kind of this Captain America sort of figure, you know, over here in the U.S. He and I were actually talking about the schools, and I've helped him to open a school in Texas where he lives. And we were talking about these schools and he goes, man, you know, we also just have this great network of men, you know, the two of us in our Rolodex. And gosh, wouldn't it be great if we could just pour into some of the young men specifically, because we obviously grew up as young men. We know how young men think. We know how they behave. We know what kind of challenges they face that are different than what girls face. Not saying girls don't face challenges, just saying they're different because we're wired differently. And so we said, man, what if, you know, we could build something to serve them as well. So we developed Apogee Strong, which is a 12-month virtual program. We've got young men now from, I think, 30 some odd different countries that are involved in this program. And it's 12 months. Every month they take on a different project. They take on a different challenge. They take on a different reading. And we put together a bunch of workouts for them. And so they start implementing these into their daily lives. And then we all gather together on Fridays virtually, and we bring in another male mentor. And these might be famous actors, musicians, professional athletes, you know, special forces, CEOs and entrepreneurs. And the young men get to interact directly with them and they get to go, okay, I've got questions for you. And it's just, you know, life advice on being a better human being. And so they get to interact with these guys. And it's been amazing. Been up and running for about a little over a year now. And the transformations in these young men, nothing short of astounding.
I think that's absolutely fantastic and needed. And so we teed it up in the introduction, you create strong young people so you don't have broken older people. But obviously, you didn't start so long ago with the young schools that we've got a generation of those people. So there are still broken old people that didn't have the opportunity at the young school. So you've created this Apogee Strong program to help, not necessarily broken, but like those older people get what they missed out on. Mm-hmm. And so the unleashing dragon slayers in a world where dragons exist, let's tie this all together. What does that mean in there? Does it tie into the savage part, the savage gentleman part, or what does that mean?
Yeah. So, you know, it goes back to the broken people. There's, you know, I say this is a world where dragons exist. There's, I mean that literally, I mean that metaphorically. There are some bad people out there, but there's bad scenarios out there. And there are a lot of, there's a lot of organizations, there are a lot of systems that are perpetuated based on division, right? We are a very divided world. We always find something to disagree about, something to argue about. Civil discourse is gone. We've got a lot of very unhappy individuals who are struggling to find purpose, and they're just finding more and more ways to divide and kind of go down into despair. And so I look at all of these as the dragons we are facing, right? And Joseph Campbell talks about, you know, if you're going to fight some dragons, it's better to go to his lair than wait for him to come to your city, right? And so that's what we're doing, is we're trying to tackle this head on. All of these programs, the schools, the mentorship program, it's meant for you to live, you know, teaching these people how to live offensively to make it so those dragons don't affect them, right? Live offensively so that you're going out and finding purpose because you're doing so many things and you're giving back so much and you're continuously growing, you know, in all of these ways so that you're on this offensive, you know, in this offensive mindset so that you have peace of mind, so that you are the inner voice over here, so that you're connecting with other people that are also growth minded, so that when you're pushing forward this way, well, the division doesn't bother you and the, you know, people yapping at you on social media. It's like, you don't have time for that because you're so busy living this mission that those metaphorical dragons, they can't touch you. They have nothing to do with you. I'm the happiest person I know. I'm the most at peace, you know, peace of mind up here. I don't know anybody who's more at peace than I am, but it's because I live a mission day in and day out. I live offensively. Of course, there's people that don't like me. Of course, there's people that get pissed that I'm building a different, you know, school alternative. Of course. Who cares? You know, and that's what I want for all these young people we're serving too.
I think that's amazing. And I imagine many of the audience share, not all, I'm sure we've pissed off a few people, like you said, who cares? But I'm sure many of them agree with that. And so for those people who are part of our tribe here, how can they find out more about what you're doing, get involved, apply, learn more, research, what you got for them?
Super cool. If they're interested on the school side, I highly recommend going to actonacademy.org, actonacademy.org, and they can just see kind of the overall network. I highly recommend going down the Acton rabbit hole on YouTube and Google, right? There's so many books, Forbes articles, Inc. articles. I mean, we're all over the place at this point. So I highly recommend checking out anything that you can find on Acton Academy. Apogee Strong, just go to apogeestrong.com. You can see what Tim and I are doing there. And then if they want to reach out and ask me any questions, I'm probably most active on Instagram, but I'm glad to help, you know, just at Matt Bodro, but I'm glad to help any way that I can.
Beautiful. So Apogee Strong, APOGEE strong.com and actonacademy.org, folks. Right, Matt, at this point in the show, we like to mix it up. We change it up. We're going to the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly. You can choose the speed in which you respond. Are you up for that?
Absolutely, brother.
Are you two thumbs up for that?
Two thumbs up.
There they are. I got you just as you're holding a coffee. So it's like, I can't put my thumb up without burning myself. Okay, let's jump in. Right, question one. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
Ooh. I would do the exact same way. Speaking, consulting, communicating. 100%, 10 times out of 10.
Beautiful. What's the most common or biggest mistake that leaders make?
Living in fear. It's the most common mistake humans make, is deciding to live in fear. And so, you know, analysis paralysis, they are too afraid of making a decision, you know, making the wrong decision, or too afraid of somebody else being pissed about it, too afraid. It's fear, living in fear, period.
So how do we combat living in fear? Give me a couple of strategies to
live on the offensive, right? You will be more confident in your decisions if you've gotten used to making decisions, right? It's like learning to walk. The more steps you take, the more times you're going to fall down, but eventually more quickly you get to the point where you're no longer falling down, right? And so it's making those decisions, you know, rapid fire and getting around the fear of blowing it.
Nice. Who is a great leader, whether they're alive or dead, and why are they a great leader?
Oh man, so many to name. One that I've had the opportunity to start to work with a little bit is a man named Jocko Willink, that your audience may know, and CEO and founder of Echelon Front. He and Leif Babin both are phenomenal humans. And I think the biggest thing that I've learned about them is, you know, we talked about being the savage gentleman. Those guys are obviously savages, but gosh, they are gentlemen. They're the kindest people and they're the most humble people. I think humility, you know, for a leader is the ultimate non-negotiable.
I think martial arts is a really good skill. Some kind of combat sports, a really good skill for teaching that humility. That like I, you know, I could get you in a headlock and pound you to the floor, but because I don't need to.
And
it also teaches discipline. And I think that's such a key skill from such a young age.
Very much so. And you learn a ton about yourself. You know, I was lucky enough to fight 9 times in a mixed martial arts cage. You learn a lot about yourself when you got thousands of people screaming and somebody else is punching you in the face. You really, really do. You know, you get to figure out who you are too. So yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. A lot of good things with martial arts.
How do you hire top talent? And in your case, that top talent would be whatever you call the equivalent of teachers at your schools.
Yeah, you hire the DNA. You don't hire the skill set, necessarily the experience. You hire the DNA, right? So I always talk, I don't ever want to hire teachers that have gone through a credential system. I've got no desire because they've just been taught to follow orders and to perpetuate a system. I'm hiring the DNA. I'm hiring a human being that just cannot help but to wake up every day and love other humans, right? I'm looking for people that are just, they want to connect with other humans. And more specifically, they love young people and they believe in them so much. I can't teach them that. I can teach them our systems and all the other skills that they'll need to make sure that works. I can't teach them to genuinely love other humans. That's all I'm looking for.
Beautiful. What is one of your proudest moments?
Oh, man. You know, my best moments have nothing to do. My best moments have nothing to do with me. It's always my kids. You know, I'd say from my young girls buying their first horses when they were, you know, 9 and 7 with the businesses that they've run from, you know, they started a marketing agency and I had, one of the biggest restaurants, in California call me, you know, afterwards and say, oh my gosh, I didn't realize, you know, I've been talking on the phone with your 10-year-old. I didn't realize she was 10. I thought she was 18 as she was running this whole thing. So it always has to do with them and how much people are always amazed at who they are. Nothing better as a dad.
Love that. What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
Gosh, well, I'd say that I fought 9 times in a mixed martial arts cage. Most people don't know that. That seemed like a past life. So I put that one out there. I was offered a job with the Secret Service to be out at the White House that I ended up turning down. Met my wife at Abercrombie and Fitch, and I'm a 5'9 white guy that used to be able to dunk a basketball.
Brilliant. There's lots of interesting facts. What daily routine do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you successful?
I get up and I go straight into the office with my coffee. So my first hour of kind of drinking that coffee is knocking out pretty much whatever my non-negotiable is for the day. So anything I got to do work-wise is done within that first hour is the non-negotiable. And I get my workout. Anything else after that is just gravy on top. But the one non-negotiable, whatever that is going to be, I write it down the night before and it's the first thing that's done in the morning before anybody else wakes up.
Amazing. You drink your coffee and eat your frog. I like that.
Yeah, buddy.
What book or books changed your mindset or life?
Oh man, gosh, so many of those too. So there's the typical, you know, 4-hour work week was a big one. But I think two of the more impactful that people may not have heard of, The Alter Ego Effect by Todd Herman, as I think is a phenomenal read for any entrepreneur, any dad. It all is about designing the person that you want to be. It kind of goes back to that Napoleon Hill concept you talked about earlier. And then one book for me, as an entrepreneur, that really changed things was The Pursuit of Happiness. Some of the people have seen the movie with Will Smith, but hearing Chris Gardner's story from his own words, really shifted a lot of things for me as a dad and an entrepreneur.
Beautiful. What's the most exciting question you spend your time thinking about?
That's a good one. Most exciting question I spend time thinking about. It might be, how can I get people out of the religion of school? And I think right now, specifically, that's college. How can I help more people understand that college is bullshit for 99% of the population?
Nice. What advice would you give your younger self?
Stay away from girls for a long time until you're ready. I just wasted a lot of time. So stay away from girls until you got your shit together.
And is that get your shit together age a sort of set age, or what shit do you think people should have together by that time?
No, I think you should have a whole lot more together a whole lot earlier if you're experiencing things, right? We waste a lot of time. School is a waste of time for most young people. So they look for outlets. Sports are great. Girls are great. That's fantastic. But we focus on that and we end up prolonging our adolescence. I think we can take on more responsibility earlier and figure out who we are a whole lot sooner than most people do now.
So on the responsibility side, actually, I'm curious. So we're giving responsibility to younger people, which I 100% wholeheartedly agree with.
Oh, yes.
What we also know, they're young, they're inexperienced, so there's going to be failures. And we also, as entrepreneurs, we're a fan of failures, right? They're an opportunity to learn. How do you, for someone that by definition yet hasn't got the confidence, because this is the exercise to help give them confidence, how do you pick them up from those failures that they won't necessarily be looking at in the same way that we would?
Yeah, but they will if we do that from day one, right? Think about the baby learning to walk. As that baby falls down, do you get mad at your kids? Did you go, oh, you suck, you can't walk, you're shitty? No, you cheered them on. You went, yes, that's awesome. And so they're like, oh, okay, great. And they tried again, right? We're the ones that change people's mindsets. And we usually do it in school where we start telling them, oh, no, failure is not an option. Your four-year-old that wants to go out and play, we start going, no, you're naughty. If you want to go out and play, you need to sit in color, right? So we're the ones that screw that up. So we only have to undo that mindset if we fucked it up in the first place. If we start out that way with our young people, teaching them, hey man, failure is exciting. Failure is awesome. They never know any different and they'll just keep going.
Beautiful. Let's,
yeah.
I love that. I am certainly thinking in terms of the fuck ups that are being learned in the young schools that, by accident, right? So that's where the undoing comes from. You're absolutely right. In fact, my son learned to walk and the whole of our ground floor of our house was tiles. So that was real trial by falling over on that surface. That wasn't soft, right? He learned to walk pretty quickly. Actually, I don't think he fell over too many times. Not indoors, anyway. So there you go. There's a solution there. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
Oh, gosh. Underrated food or drink. I don't know if it's... God, that's a really good one, man. I'm a big sushi fan. I'm a big steak fan. And I'm going to go... I'm going to stay with red meat, man. You know what? Goat.
Goat? What format? Like curried goat or some other form?
What did you say?
Curried goat, which is like the, how it would be in like the Caribbean.
I'm not a curry fan, but I think goat in general is something, at least in America, we don't touch very much at all. I know that a lot of the majority of the world eats it, but that is something that I was recently introduced to. I eat predominantly red meat and I had never really had goat. Goat's freaking phenomenal. So I'm going to go goat.
Nice. Just like a steak.
So just like a steak or a roast or a, yep, 100%.
Beauty. And then final question, Matt, what makes you happiest?
It's the mission. I get up every single day and I get to live a mission with my favorite people on the planet who are all happy and living their mission, right? My wife is happy and living her mission. She's excited about what she does every day. My kids are happy and living their mission. They are excited. They're literally excited to wake up every morning and get after what they're doing. You know, all of us are doing the things we want to do, and they're all productive things that are helping other human beings. So, I mean, it doesn't get any better than that.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Matt, that brings us to the end of the interview. You've been absolutely fantastic. I absolutely love what you are doing, what you are installing and what you are nurturing in the next generation. I genuinely believe that the big change in the world is going to come from entrepreneurs, not from government, not from organization. Here on the show, we talk about building an army of enlightened entrepreneurs that understand that they have a responsibility to make the world better, to leave it better than they found it, to use their resources, to use their influence, to use their power, their money, whatever it is, to that mission, to that end. And I love that you are installing that in the next generation and building an army of entrepreneurs, enlightened entrepreneurs, no less yourself. Keep doing what you're doing, brother. I know you need no encouragement because you are true to your mission, but thank you so much for coming on the show today to share that mission with us.
Thank you, my friend. It's absolutely an honor, man. You did a great job too, so I appreciate you.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.